and on behalf of my veterans, I'm pissed.
Yeah. Yep.
So what's okay. What the hell's going on?
Senator Dan Sullivan asks for quicker action on a problem facing Alaska veterans. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 4th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, Anchorage officials describe the urgent need to redesign the downtown transit center.
Every Monday I leave those meetings and I think, my God, it can't get any worse. And the next week it gets worse.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The Veterans Affairs Department pledged to create a pilot program to help Alaska veterans get health care services outside the VA. The pilot program didn't get underway in November as promised, but a top VA official says they're making progress. Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan asked VA Undersecretary David Shulkin about it at a hearing this week. Sullivan said VA staffers told his aides they may delay the Alaska pilot program further or ditch it entirely.
And on behalf of my veterans, I'm pissed.
Yeah. Yep.
So what's okay. What the hell's going on?
Shulkin told Sullivan he's still committed to the Alaska pilot program.
And I am not walking back on this.
But your staff was walking back.
My staff, who I bet is watching this right now, is listening to me as I say, we are not walking back on this. I made a commitment to you and to the veterans, and we are going to see this through.
Essentially, the Alaska pilot is supposed to restore a program that allowed Alaska veterans to contact the VA to get care at private clinics and in the native health care system. The new choice program requires veterans to call an Arizona-based contractor called TriWest, and some patients say it's been impossible to get appointments. Under the pilot program, TriWest is supposed to have employees working in the offices of the Alaska VA. These days, Shulkin told Sullivan, Alaska calls are still routed to a TriWest call center out of state, but the calls are consolidated.
We have, through TriWest, a virtual call center only answering for Alaska. I said to you, I want people in Alaska scheduling.
And my team was told you guys are not doing that.
We are doing it, but it required a contract modification to a federal contract, which is a bigger deal than I knew when I came into the government.
Shulkin says the contract modification was finally complete last month, and he says TriWest expects to have employees embedded in the Alaska VA within 6 weeks. Officials in Anchorage are planning a major overhaul of the city's downtown transit center. As KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports, the early plan offers a vision of a revitalized downtown, but few specifics about what happens to many of the people there now.
The Anchorage Community Development Authority, ACDA, which is in charge of the space, loses about $500,000 a year just maintaining it. That's way too much, says ACDA Director Andrew Halcrow, considering what a dangerous place it is. Halcrow and his team did more than 60 interviews at the transit center to hear about its problems.
Okay, so this guy here, go ahead and stop it. He's a regular.
They also poured over hundreds of hours of surveillance videos. Halcrow walks me through one day's worth of footage, slowing down as security guards check on a woman slumped over at a bench.
You've got these two officers. You can see how quickly this escalates. And they're still engaging her, and they're saying, okay, ma'am, you know. And now this guy gets involved, and this guy in the yellow jacket's a regular. And our security officers are trying to take care of the woman on the bench, and now you got a crowd gathering around. And meanwhile, who knows what's going on the other side of the facility?
Handling people who are drunk, high, or passed out, Halcrow says, is a huge share of the security officer's work. So far this year, there have been 1,700 calls to the Community Service Patrol, and that figure doesn't include trips where multiple people are picked up.
At one point in time, 2 weeks ago during that cold snap, they had four in their office at once.
But that's just one part of the illegality and crime Halcrow points out in the footage. He tracks a man in a yellow jacket, an alleged drug dealer.
Here's our guy again in the back.
Security staff call the 33-year-old the father because he heads up a group of teens nicknamed the Downtown Family. There are serious concerns with human trafficking at the transit center, but like suspicions about drug dealing, the security guards on staff do not have full police powers to investigate. The facility is also just outdated, designed 3 decades ago under a very different philosophy about public space. Heating is expensive, too many corners, blocks, sight lines, and as Halcor points out, the bathrooms tucked away by the sides invite more trouble than janitors can keep up with.
I mean, we have security briefings at this table every Monday morning, and every Monday I leave those meetings and I think, my God, it can't get any worse. In the next week, it gets worse.
Halcor and his team say the problems dissuade ridership on the buses and drive people away from what they see as a prime location for business opportunities. The plan that premiered this week calls for less public space and a design that moves riders along instead of allowing them to linger indoors. ACDA is also looking for an anchor tenant to remold the interior around, one that can fill a hole they see in basic amenities available downtown.
I think Walgreens is perfect.
At this point, everything is preliminary, including financing figures and timelines. But one thing that was not addressed in the design unveiling is what happens to existing tenants, either the food vendors downstairs or the social service providers renting spaces on the second level.
We're aware of discussions ongoing, but we're not involved in the planning.
Jennifer Smith Mayrud directs communications for Alaska Youth Advocates, the organization in charge of the Power Teen Center on the second floor. She says, the transit center is a rough space with a lot of tough issues, but that's exactly why they have a teen center there.
Wherever you're going to have low-income folks and vulnerable people congregating, you're going to have predators. And so the transit center has its share of unpleasant individuals. And so we do what we can to make sure that the space that we're providing is safe.
It's an issue that keeps coming up. What to do with city residents who have nowhere else to go? Since taking office, Mayor Ethan Berkowitz has announced similar redesign plans for nearby Town Square Park, also identified as a trouble spot by the business community. Berkowitz says both are pieces in a broader strategy to revitalize downtown.
We do have a problem with homelessness in this community. We have a problem with public safety. Addressing the homelessness issue, addressing the public safety issue will help make the transit center a more attractive place for everybody to use. I mean, downtown should belong to all people who come through Anchorage, not just those who find refuge there because it's cold.
The ACDA board will take plans back up during its meeting in January. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The Ketchikan City Council on Thursday voted to ban the commercial sale of marijuana within city limits. Mayor Lou Williams III requested that the issue be brought before the council for a vote. Williams says he doesn't oppose the sale of certain items, but is concerned with oils, concentrates, and edibles. Under current state law, municipalities can opt out of commercial sales completely, but if they approve sales, they cannot restrict the types of products sold. Council member Judy Zinge voted against the measure. She says Alaska voters approved the use of marijuana and their wishes should be honored. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a former prisoner makes a new life for himself and reflects on the person he used to be.
At that time, I believed that my life was so crappy, people can afford to give something to me.
Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence,
and by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Lawmakers are considering alternatives to their expensive and controversial office space in Anchorage. When the state renewed its lease on the Legislative Information Office in downtown Anchorage last year, it paid about $7.5 million for renovations and saw its annual rent spike from under $700,000 to more than $4 million a year. The deal was negotiated by Representative Mike Hawker, an Anchorage Republican, and approved by the Legislative Council, which handles the legislature's administrative business. But with a budget crisis prompting cuts across the state, the high rent has become an embarrassment for lawmakers. The question now is whether the state can get out of the deal and find anything cheaper. On Friday, the council heard a range of options prepared by its chair, Republican Senator Gary Stevens of Kodiak. Stevens's report found the cheapest option by far would be to move into the state-owned Atwood building a few blocks away. Moving into the Atwood building would cost about $10 million over 10 years. Keeping the existing lease, by comparison, would cost an estimated $40 million over 10 years, Stevens found, while buying the current building outright would cost at least $43 million. State agencies are feeling the squeeze of a shrinking budget, and some are using furloughs on a small scale to save a little money. KSK's Monica Gokey has more on what it adds up to.
Being on furlough is sort of like getting laid off for a day. Your employer tells you not to come to work, and you don't get paid. Two state agencies furloughed their non-union employees on Black Friday, the Department of Law and the Department of Administration. Alaska courts were also closed that day as a part of a cost-cutting measure announced earlier in the year. In all, four agencies under the executive branch have approved furlough schemes. Department of Administration spokesman Andy Mills says about 520 employees are affected.
The total number of days expected to be furloughed will total a savings of $562,600 to budgetary cost savings.
That's right, about $500,000. Roughly, it's a little more than 0.1% of the state's estimated budget deficit. It's small. All executive branch agencies saw their budgets cut this year by anywhere from 5% to 35%. With that kind of fiscal belt tightening, Mills says the furlough feels preferable to the alternative.
Most employees that do have furlough days very much understand why the state is undertaking furlough days. And that's going to result in savings for the agency without sort of additional layoffs in staff.
Have you done anything cool with your furlough days?
No, extra turkey time with the family at this point.
On the one hand, furlough days are a bona fide excuse to take some extra time off around the holidays, or even days of your choosing, depending on which agency you work for. Some see that as a win. But on the other hand, since the state employees getting furloughed are salaried, they have fixed workloads and fewer paid workdays to do their jobs. The next court closure is the day before Christmas, and it'll likewise be a furlough day for employees of the Departments of Law and Administration. In Anchorage, I'm Monica Gokey.
As Juneau's mayor, Mary Becker, is establishing regular office hours at City Hall, attending meetings scheduled by the late mayor and educating herself on her new role. At the same time, she wants to follow through with some of Greg Fisk's initiatives. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
Since Tuesday, Mary Becker has been going to City Hall every day and working in the office of the mayor.
This is Greg's office. This is the mayor's office. And now that I'm in this position, this is my office now.
She hasn't moved anything around. She's barely touched anything. Becker was reelected to serve as deputy mayor by the assembly in October. Per city charter, that position succeeds as mayor in the event of a vacancy.
When you say yes to being deputy mayor, you know that is always a possibility. It's not just a title. It comes with a responsibility that's what you will do if you need to, and you hope you'll never need to.
A lot of her time as mayor so far has been spent talking about Fisk. His death on Monday attracted national attention. And for a couple days, she had reporters from all over the country calling her from 5 a.m. to midnight. When Fisk was elected in October, Becker says he was a breath of fresh air for the community.
And he had a lot of ideas, and it was a new regime.
One of Fisk's new ideas was how to run the annual assembly retreat, which will still take place on December 14th.
Greg wrote such a well thought out method for us to use that I think will be exactly what we need right now. We'll be honoring his memory to be doing this process.
In a November 25th memo, Fisk wrote that he wanted the assembly to identify a big-picture common vision for the community to work toward for many years to come. He didn't want to just focus on current issues facing Juneau or to look only at the upcoming year. In the past, City Manager Kim Kiefer says the Assembly retreat has focused on 10 to 15 different priorities. This year, she says, Fisk wanted the Assembly to establish just a few overarching goals.
It was just a different way to approach a process that's happened in the past and put it more into the let's look at where we want to go and figure out what the steps are that we need to take now to get ourselves to that point.
Along with the memo, Fisk provided links to websites of cities that have established visions, goals, and ideals. Kiefer says she was excited for the changes Fisk had planned.
He was also very respectful of the process that was in place already. You know, he made the determination not to change up committees because he knew he was the new person on the Assembly. So he wasn't into this is Greg Fisk as mayor, how it's going to happen. It was, okay, how do we bring everybody along to that new vision?
Prior to becoming mayor, Fisk was co-chair of a NOAA task force formed by the Assembly in 2014. The goal of the task force was to lure federal research jobs to Alaska. He had a meeting scheduled in a few weeks with local NOAA staff, and Kiefer says that meeting will still happen.
We need to continue to move that forward. Because of his expertise, he had a lot of knowledge in that, and so we will miss that knowledge, definitely, but we will need to, we need to have that meeting. We can't, we owe it to him.
As city business continues to move forward with Becker as mayor, the Assembly needs to appoint someone to the now vacant Assembly seat. Then, the Assembly can opt to call a special election for mayor, or wait until the next regular election in October when both seats will be on the ballot. Becker says she's comfortable being mayor till October. A special election would cost the city about $35,000. The Assembly's next regular meeting is December 21st. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Alaska Pacific University delivers an affordable education and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. Graduate with work-ready experience in the career field of your choice. Apply now for fall 2016 and find out more about APU's Promise Tuition Grant and other scholarships at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue,
Dillingham, Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Emily Kwong. This week on AK, hitting reset. Restarting life after prison is full of challenges, but also successes. For our final story in the series, Hitting Reset, we travel to the village of Tayonek on Cook Inlet, where one man is recreating himself and giving back to the community he once harmed. Here's KSKA's urban affairs reporter, Ann Hillman.
When Lekan Chewitt Jr. first joined the Tayonek Volunteer Fire Department this summer, the cavernous garage that housed the aging equipment was a mess. Gear was on the floor, one of the garage doors didn't open, and only a few lights worked.
The firefighters were coming in and getting dressed in practically darkness. They would open the doors. My question was, what are you going to do when winter comes around? And they said, we got flashlights.
So Lekan raised money through Facebook to buy new lights. Then he set to work fixing the doors, repairing the trucks, and getting the heater to work again.
And I just Google everything. And then I say, I can do that. And I just start doing it.
Lekan, who also goes by Tim, Timothy, and Lee, was not always Mr. Helpful. We walk down one of Tayonek's six streets, and he points out a few buildings, like the old tribal center.
There's a little opening right there. I'd climb up there and get through there, climb in the attic, and steal stuff from there.
Lekan says he started out stealing food with his cousin when he was eight. By that point, he and his siblings had already been in and out of the foster care system because his parents were alcoholics. Over and over, when he tells the story, he blames himself. He says his actions triggered investigations into the family. His actions got his siblings separated again and again. When he was 10, he was arrested for the first time for taking a motorcycle and sent to McLaughlin Youth Center for 3 days. By his mid-teens, he was stealing regularly, drinking and using pot.
At that time, I believed that my life was so crappy, people can afford to give something to me. I think I expected things.
So he just took them. Lee Khan's cousin, Jane Standifer, looked after him throughout his childhood. She says he wasn't always that way.
He was a pretty good kid. He was always curious on, he would take radios and all different things apart. And we're like, Timothy, what are you doing? We used to call him Tim, and he'd say, oh, I'm trying to figure out how it works.
Gene says it was hard when he left the village and ended up in prison.
It really hurt. You know, missing all those years with him and watching him grow, and I almost want to cry now. But
Lee Khan says his first few experiences with incarceration had no impact on his behavior. He didn't bother taking any classes or trying to get sober. He'd leave, he'd steal again, he'd go back. He even escaped twice. Finally, in December of 1992, he was caught for armed robbery in Fairbanks and sentenced to 29 years in prison with 9 suspended. For the first year, he was in segregation because of his escapes and was only allowed outside of his tiny cell for 2 hours per day.
We had other inmates we can yell up and down the halls, have conversations through the, basically lying on your bellies talking underneath the door.
They talk about their lives, the inadequacies of the system, and computers, because one guy liked computers. So Lee Khan started getting magazines and teaching himself about them. Eventually, he got out of the hole, was sent to Arizona, and started taking classes. He learned social skills by watching PBS, and he met a counselor who finally helped him understand the impacts of his actions.
The things that I thought were little made a big impact on people's lives. You go into their home, you take away more than just their possessions. You take away their safety.
As we walk toward the clinic where Lee Khan now works as the EMS coordinator, he talks about learning to rechannel his skills. He says he kept repeating one thing to himself.
There were people that talked to me who said, you are better than this, you're smart, you can lead this village one day. They saw something that I wasn't seeing.
When Lee Khan started seeing it, he sobered up, became a mentor in prison, and in 2006 was released to Anchorage. He says he didn't want to go straight back to Tyonek. He still had things to work on.
And make sure that I'm comfortable with who I am before I come back home, because I don't want to bring a mess back home and start over where I was.
He started with a job at IHOP and eventually spent 7 years at the Food Bank of Alaska. But this summer, he decided it was time to move home and take care of his mother. The volunteer firefighters didn't know what to expect when Lee Khan showed up to join the crew. But Gwen Chikalushin says they quickly warmed up to him. Having Tim the tool man around helped morale.
Yeah, it's a lot better. We come in, we turn the lights on, it gets bright, it's not dim anymore. The door will open when we push a button, so yeah, and the door opens and closes on the truck, yeah. Because before, we didn't know, I wasn't going to try to fix it.
Lee Khan says once he started fixing things, people pitched in to get the fire station in order. One afternoon, he arrived as they finished up organizing.
We moved the trucks back in, and I just walked around, and I thought, this is a new home for me, I think.
Lee Khan's come full circle, back to the village of his childhood, where he was kind and curious, still taking things apart to see how they work. From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
Now it's time for 49 Voices, and we're staying in Tyonek to hear from Jane Standifer. She remembers working at the teen center in town when she was a teen herself back in the early 1980s.
Well, I used to work at the teen center as a teen aide. So the kids would come in and would be hungry or, you know, something, and and said, well, is your mom and them drinking? Yeah, they're drinking with so-and-so, and we already knew about the other one, so we would, you know, fix up some hamburgers and fries, and we'd feed them, and I'd tell them, come on. We'd just take a bunch home. One time, I think I had like 17 kids when I was about 15, and I had parents getting mad at me because I took them in, but I'd rather them been safe than in a home where they was drinking. I was working at the snack bar, and there was a time when a parent came in. We had two of the kids with us already playing at the snack bar, and both parents were under the influence. They had pretty much a newborn with them, only in a receiving blanket in the winter. Me and two of my coworkers, we snagged the baby and we ran around the building and hid. They was talking about calling the troopers on us, and we was telling them, go ahead, you know. And we ended up taking that three children in until the parents sobered up. You know, it was dead cold winter, and only in a receiving blanket and a t-shirt or a onesie. And that's just spooky, you know. You need more people to help watch over the younger ones, even if it is you think they're going to call the cops or troopers, or because you never know what will happen to the child if you don't.
Jane Standifer still lives in Tyonek, where she helps connect people to public assistance programs. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. If you want to tell your story, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK. We had help this week from Ann Hillman, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Emily Kwong.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Zachariah Hughes, Rachel Waltholtz, and Monica Goki in Anchorage, Maria Dudzak in Ketchikan, and Lisa Fu in Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Rural CAP commemorates 50 years of delivering early childhood education programs like Head Start and Parents as Teachers. Signature housing programs, including weatherization, self-help housing, and permanent affordable housing, make a difference in our communities. AmeriCorps members and elder mentors have positive impacts to education, health, and the environment. Learn more at ruralcap.com. This message is sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive education grounded in real-world experience. Through their engaging staff and faculty, APU's education is designed to broaden and deepen their students' potential through action and understanding. Hashtag, this is our classroom. This message sponsored by APU.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.